everybody. Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast. It's Kimberly Johnson in D.C. And my co-host Stephanie, who usually sits right next to me in Oakland, California, isn't able to be here today. But she told me to tell everybody that she sends her love and she'll be back next week when we chat with Jen Kirkman. That's going to be an awesome show and you're definitely going to have to tune in. But today I'm excited because I get to talk with the feminist next door. And she goes by M, so we're going to call her M. But if you're not aware of who she is, she has an amazing Twitter account. She obviously focuses on feminism, and she does so with a common sense approach mixed with a little bit of snark and a little bit of humor. But she's very informative, and I absolutely love her feed. It's one of the go-to feeds. Every morning I wake up, what is she saying? It's going to be a great conversation. But before we get started, got a little bit of business we got to go to. So first, I want to thank everybody who supports this podcast, and to those who don't, you can support the show by becoming a monthly subscriber. $5 gets you into the End Another Thing segment, where Steph and I often get into fun and juicy subjects like sex and body image, and sometimes we share our deepest, darkest secrets and talk about our old age. It's so much fun. You don't want to miss that. And by the way, Steph might be joining me a little later for the End Another Thing segment, but we're going to have to record that later, and it'll be on my computer, so it won't be as high-tech as this show. But anyway, you can become a patron with any dollar amount from one to infinity, and we love infinity. You can visit patreon.com/startmeup and support our show. Today's show is sponsored by thewillowgrove.com, and I'm going to talk about all of their wonderful natural products. These days, it's all about the little things, right? It might be a kind word from a friend, a Trump-related indictment, or it could be a delicious-smelling, certified organic body product from the Willow Grove. Start your day by showering with a vegan, plant-based handmade soap in a gorgeous scent like orange spearmint or clove cinnamon honey. Oh my God, that one smells so good. And then cover yourself in essential oil-infused hand and body lotion. I absolutely love their lotion. It's non-greasy, and it leaves my skin feeling so soft all day. The spearmint lavender eucalyptus is exquisite, but my personal favorite is citrus sensations. It smells so fresh and clean. Go to the Willow Grove to see all of their amazing products, and don't forget to treat yourself to Stephanie's favorite, the flaxseed-filled eye pillow. They help to mitigate headaches, soothe aching muscles, and relieve arthritis, and they come in 4 scents. Looking for lavender, refreshment, sleepy time, and spirit's wisdom. So the good folks at Willow Grove are offering a flat shipping rate of only $5 for orders under $50 and free shipping for orders over $50 anywhere in the U.S. Visit thewillowgrove.com and enter the code SMU18 for 15% off your order. That's SMU18 for 15% off. And that's at thewillowgrove.com. Okay, so now we get to start the show. And as I said, my guest is feminist next door, but she goes by M. Sorry, I'm blah, blah, blah. But anyway, welcome, M.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Wow, I'm really excited to start talking to you because I have so many questions.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, before we even start with what I have prepared, since you're basically an anonymous account, you keep yourself anonymous, what can you tell us about yourself?
Okay, what can I tell you about myself?
A little secret or something.
I live in New York.
Okay.
I work as an attorney here. I think most people know that. I'm born and raised in the Midwest. I come from a pretty decent-sized family and a really solid sort of organic feminist background. Hmm. So I was really fortunate to have sort of a solid foundation coming from a really, corporate ice queen, awesome mom, and like hippie dad. So
I see you talk about your father a lot.
Yes.
My and that dad he's very proud is, of you.
My dad's sort of my number one fan. And the running joke is, so he has a Twitter account, but he won't tell me his handle. So I know that he looks at my Twitter all the time, but I have no idea, like, if he interacts on it. Like, anybody could be my dad. I don't know.
Right.
It could be, like, you could be my dad right now. I don't know.
That's so funny.
So he won't tell me his handle, but... yeah, so I moved to New York after law school, and I've been here for, I guess, 8 years now. And I joined Twitter. Actually, my Twitter handle is from like 2009 because I grabbed it when I was in college. But I didn't actually start tweeting very often until the election.
You mean the 2016 election?
That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I actually haven't been, you know, super engaged on Twitter for that long, but
but you've built up a huge following. I mean, you've got like over 130,000 followers now.
Yeah, it was really sort of. I mean, I never really set out certainly to be a voice on Twitter. I was sort of doing battle with people I went to high school with on Facebook and not really about that life. So a friend of mine who is also on Twitter recommended that I sort of move over to the Twitter platform, that I might get some more satisfaction out of that kind of interaction. So I just started sort of like tweeting, like venting, I guess. I never, never imagined that people would be interested in what I was saying. I just started, you know, I would just sort of spout off, and then over time more and more people started following me, and I've just been really fortunate that people, you know, want to hear what I have to say, and I feel lucky. I feel very lucky.
Well, you know, I mean, the kinds of things you tweet are so fascinating, and you come from such a pragmatic perspective. Obviously you're a lawyer, so the way your mind works, you're very clear. Like, for instance, your pinned tweet says, Brock Turners grow up to be Brett Kavanaugh's who make the rules for Brock Turners. I love that tweet. It's so succinct and to the point, and you really drive that point across. And I think that's why so many people just love tuning in and seeing what you have to say. And on top of that, you also get a lot of whiny sexist men who don't like your feed. And the way you handle them is just, and I don't use this word lightly, but brilliant, because you often will quote tweet them with whatever, you know, response you have, which is always based in fact and reality. And what do you like? I mean, as far as those men are concerned who come on and try to combat, you know, do combat with you online and argue with you, how do you feel about them? Do they get you upset? Do you laugh at them? What do you think?
Oh, I guess I would say I have a range of reactions to them. I think some are certainly, some of them can cut a little deeper than others. I mean, there are some responses that are so generic that I'm so accustomed to hearing them that they don't really affect me. And what would fall into that category would be anything that's like personal insult related. Mm-hmm. Anything that's tropish, you know, those to me are actually kind of fun, because I have seen them so many times that I usually have like a pretty good response. but I think that the guys honestly that frustrate me the most are the guys where I come in late in the conversation and I see they've been sort of berating someone in my replies for, you know, 10 or 12 rounds. And those are actually the ones I have the hardest time not just kind of going off on, because I think it's the sort of demonstration, like in real time, of the behaviors that I'm critical of. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of, you know, it frustrates me because I'm saying like this tweet that you're replying to about how men are aggressive, like you're super aggressive right
now. Yeah. They don't even realize they're illustrating what you're saying.
So, I mean, those ones honestly probably frustrate me the most, but I think ultimately, you know, I kind of have to walk up this line where, as much as I really disagree with the idea that women shouldn't be overly emotional or shouldn't be angry or shouldn't, shouldn't express what is in many ways very valid rage and frustration at these types of responses. I try to provide measured replies because ultimately I'm trying to give people information that they can use in conversations with other people.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, everybody has the reaction of anger. Like, that's natural. It's totally legitimate. And, you know, it's sort of universal. So I'm trying to give people more than that. You know, I'm trying to give people information that they can use in arguments and, you know, ways to frame concepts that help people understand them. You know, as an attorney, a lot of what I do, you know, part of just my personality, but I think certainly my work plays into it, is I'm constantly trying to figure out how to explain things to people in a way that makes sense and that is persuasive. And
that's the most important. You know, I always like to say that when you are doing battle on Twitter or any kind of social media, oftentimes your replies are not meant for the actual person you're applying to, but for the people who are following the conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of like, that's one of my big pet peeves. I mean, I'm sure you've seen me do it really 100 times I'm like, please don't tell me who to reply to. Like, there's 180 replies in all of my tweets. If you think that I've randomly selected this one, like, please think again.
Exactly.
you know, I try to choose reply, you know, regardless of who the account is that's replying to me. I try to choose responses that I think are things people hear often, or you know, something that I want to make a point about or an argument against, because ultimately I think one of the most challenging things about feminism is that it's a very organic idea. It's not always easy to explain when someone says to you, well, what rights do you not have that I have? Like, people really struggle with that question, because immediately they want to go into this like really academic analysis, because that's how we think about rights. And it can be difficult to explain, you know, I just want to be treated the same as you're treated. And people get hung up on that. And, you know, people who are asking that question are not asking it because they want to know. They're asking it because they want to be like, see, you don't know.
Right.
So, you know, I try to, in as many ways as I can, give people examples of ways that they can respond to those types of questions that make sense.
Yeah, well, that I mean, I kind of do that because I'm an advocate for the Equal Rights Amendment. And oftentimes when I'm posting about that or somebody else is, men will come on and say, what rights do I have that you don't? And in that particular case with the Equal Rights Amendment, I always say it's, yes, women definitely have equal rights. But in this particular case, this is about constitutional protection against gender discrimination. Nobody has that. I mean, women are the ones who are affected by it more, but men don't have it either. And I always like to cite both the very conservative late Justice Antonin Scalia, because he specified that women don't have that, and then or that there are no protections for gender discrimination, and then also that the 14th Amendment does not cover in court cases. It's often cited, but it doesn't work to protect.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing right now about the status of sex discrimination as far as, you know, equal protection under the law is, you know, there have been numerous attempts to raise gender discrimination to the level of strict scrutiny. So, you know, racial, age, ethnicity, national origin are all, you know, suspect classes subject to strict scrutiny. So I'll try not to get too legalistic here, but essentially it's a very high standard to meet for the government to discriminate on those basis. And sex discrimination has never reached that level. It's gotten to what's called intermediate scrutiny, which is the only type of discrimination that falls into that category, which I think is funny because essentially it was like they just weren't willing to go there. You know, like they were like, we understand that you should definitely have a higher level of scrutiny, but we're just not willing to give it to you. So they sort of created this intermediate class of scrutiny. And, you know, ultimately, I think the Equal Rights Amendment is easy to sell because it's neutral in terms of its level of protection. It's not based on, you know, whether you're a woman or man, or non-binary or whatever. So you know, for every argument that I hear that men are treated unfairly by the court system or sentencing guidelines or whatever, you know, that's for you, man. You know, like that's going to help you too. You should want this. it's interesting, you know, that you're not fighting for this. I mean, maybe it isn't interesting, but,
yeah, it's quite sad, actually, how both men and women will argue, and they're usually, unfortunately, they're usually conservative, not all the time. But I think the reason why so many people argue against it is because they aren't familiar with the history of it and what mm-hmm. it will actually do for people. And so at least the way I look at it is it's just like I'm in an education role. I try not to talk about it every day. I don't want oversaturation, but at the same time, right. I hope to, you know, just educate in general terms. And then, you know, people want to come back and scream and argue. And I've learned, like you said, you start becoming used to what the critics are going to say. So you're prepared mm-hmm. to have something on hand. That's why I like to point out it was Ruth Bader Ginsburg Justice Antonin Scalia. Yep. Both talk about the Equal Rights Amendment. One is uh-huh. liberal, one was conservative. So, you know, it's like you said, it is an easy sell, but it isn't, because it's been going on for so long, and we're only on one last state, and that's, you know, right now there was this big big thing in Virginia that was going on, and two guys from the House, Cox and, oh God, I can't remember the other guy's name, but either way, they wouldn't let the vote go to the floor. And then we had this whole thing with, you know, the blackface and Justin Fairfax, and now nobody's even talking about it. So it's kind of sad how it's just gone off. But, you know, I kind of also want to talk to you a little bit about over the weekend, I got to see Jen Kirkman perform, and she did this whole set. And at the end, she talked about how... It was a couple of different things. I mean, she touched on not all men. She touched on how men can be allies. But she specifically was coming from which I am a Gen Xer. I'm 50 years old. And she's coming from a Gen X point of view that so many women are conditioned. And I wrote about this yesterday or the other day. So many women are conditioned to accept sexism and misogyny. Mm-hmm. And so that and this it really, really, really touched me because... I, you know, 2012, I became a blogger, a feminist blogger. And mm-hmm. that's when I started I've always been a feminist, but it's not like I ran around announcing myself, hey, I'm a feminist, everybody. I just was a feminist. And I didn't really start realizing all of the sexism that I experienced, whether it's misogyny, sexism, whatever, until I was about, in my 40s. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't walking around feeling like a victim of it. I always kind of felt empowered. I always thought that, you know, women, since the second wave of feminism, women were really taking off in the business world. And my mother was a feminist and she raised me as a single mom. And so in this blog post, one of the things that I mentioned was when I was about 5 years old, I was at a party with my parents, and I kind of wandered off into this room, and there was a group of men. And there was this one man who's like holding court, and he was kind of known as the funny man in the group. I was aware of who he was, and everyone laughed. He was always so funny. So when I walked in and it was just all these men, he kind of called me over, and I was this little girl, and he says, you know, Kimberly, do you know how I get women? I like, you know, no. So he says something like, I take my clothes off and I get into a barrel and I roll down the street and all the pretty women I see, I grab them and I stick them in the barrel with me. And so as a little girl listening to this story, I laughed, all the men laughed and mm-hmm. I laughed, and I never told my parents about it. So obviously there was some kind of trigger in me that I knew this was wrong, but, but I thought it was funny. And later on, I told my parents about it, and I told it as a funny story. And mm-hmm. I don't even remember either one of my parents freaking out about it. They just kind of laughed. Later, I learned the same guy molested his stepdaughter. This was years later I learned. And so I shared these stories, and people's responses were like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. And it was like, I didn't feel sorry for myself. Now I look mm-hmm. back at my young self and think, God, I mean, what if that was my daughter? Mm-hmm. I would be fucking angry. And, you know, and it's like, But I saw it as funny. I didn't realize I was basically a victim of misogyny, sexism, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. It was inappropriate behavior. But I mean, I don't know your age, but you sound young.
I'm 31.
And so now, do you feel that you grew up in an environment like I just explained, or is it different for you?
I think there certainly was a blend. I mean, like I said, my home environment was very, very, you know, progressive. Mm-hmm. So I think honestly, in some ways it helped and hurt me because I wasn't necessarily prepared to deal with those types of behaviors mm-hmm. when I left home because I hadn't been exposed to them and I hadn't ever had a conversation about it. You know, like I'd had conversations with my mom about, you know, things that she had to go through, but it kind of felt over, you know, like
yeah,
it felt
right.
Like, oh, well, that was like really bad that you used to get harassed at work and, you know, that you weren't allowed to play sports in high school. And, you know, but it's not like that now. I mean, I play sports and I talk to people, I don't get harassed at my job at, you know, Damon's Rib House, which is actually totally untrue, but I just didn't see it that way. Mm-hmm. And I think there is definitely sort of like this enlightenment period for a lot of women, and it happens, you know, at different points in their life. Hopefully, I think women are getting younger and younger as they are getting to that point. But certainly, I don't think I really understood a lot of what was happening around me and how it was affecting like the structure of all of the things that I was existing in until I was in law school, at least. Hmm. Because I just sort of, again, it's like you said, I just sort of accepted that that this made sense. And I think, you know, in the story that you described, you know, I think everyone has had at least one of those experiences. You know, working on Wall Street, I've been in my fair share of really uncomfortable joke situations.
Mm-hmm, right.
And there's sort of this idea of like, well, if they're telling me the joke, then it means like I'm in the club. Right.
Right.
So like I'm accepted. So if I just laugh, like they're not going to do anything to me. And you don't think about that like as it's happening.
But, right. Like, it's just kind of there lurking.
But like that's what's happening because you would never make that joke like with your girlfriends, mm-hmm. you know. So it's like there's definitely sort of this element of like I'm just not going to rock the boat because like I want them to think I'm cool so that like it's not scary. And, like the more that I see, like I see it all the time now, you know, just even in media or, you know, certainly, on Twitter, the way people talk to one another. And I'm sort of like, why would you even say that? You know, like, I mean, do you understand the root of like what you're saying, like what it really means? Mm-hmm. So I think that's super relatable for me. And I think, I'm still sort of hitting points of, you know, like I'll see a commercial and be like, what the, like, are you serious? Like, that's so misogynistic. You're like the Alexa commercial. Everyone was like, oh, it's so adorable. And I was like, why can't this guy take care of his own kid? I don't understand. I was like, oh, I'm broken. I'm never going to have a sense of humor again. But I mean, I think that it just sort of surrounds you in a way. Like I am grateful to being on Twitter because I get a lot of messages from people who say things like, you know, I never really realized that this was happening until I was reading your tweets.
Yeah.
From men and women, a lot of men too.
Yes.
So, you know, that's definitely sort of a universal reaction.
Well, that, you know, that's one thing that I want to kind of touch on also is that, at least in my experience, I started becoming involved online as a feminist, like I said, in 2012. So I started talking about it. And that was around the time when, you know, the Rush Limbaugh thing happened and he was talking uh-huh. about Sandra Fluck being a slut. And there was and then also the 2011 or 2010 midterms. By the beginning of 2011, the Tea Party basically got in and started what was referred to as the War on Women, which is still mm-hmm. happening. And, you know, they were going through and getting rid of abortion clinics, basing them on trap laws, which were just ridiculous. And there was just all this stuff. And there was, I don't know if you remember that one guy who said that women have like something about women's bodies have a way of shutting that whole thing down when they get pregnant by rape.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I was in that, like, right in the thick of it, and I was starting to see a lot of defensive, even liberal men, you know, when I would say men. And they're like, not all men. And so I want to get to your bees thing. But so I've been kind of dealing with this for a bunch of years. And over these years, I have seen an evolution of the amount of men going from almost all of them getting defensive to a huge chunk of them getting it. They're like, oh, my God, I get it. But there is still that group that, A, wants to explain to you how they're going to be allies. As opposed to just listening, which I want to get your take on that. But it's like how they can be allies in the not all men. It's not all men. It's not all men. You gave, I don't know if you can remember word for word, but you gave this wonderful, you tweeted out this wonderful thing about bees. Can you kind of just go over that?
Yeah. Okay, let's see if I can think of it. all right, so it's a woman walks into an emergency room. Her face is swollen. Cheeks are red. She's gasping for air. And the doctor says, what happened to you? And she says, bees. And he says, well, not all bees. And she says, stung by bees. And he says, well, some bees stung you. And she says, bees. And he says, well, I mean, not all the bees in the world stung you. And then she just passes out.
Exactly.
So it's sort of like, you know, it's, I guess, intended to demonstrate that, you know, just because not all the men in the world have done a certain thing, it has literally net zero effect on how much I'm harmed by it.
Right.
And so, like, there's really no point at all other than preservation of your own ego, which truthfully I'm not even convinced that is the reason why you're doing this, that you need to correct what I'm saying by saying not all, it doesn't change what I'm saying at all. And so really, you know, it has the effect of telling me to shut up, or telling me to reframe what I'm saying in a way that's palatable to you. And, you know, I think honestly of all of the, you know, of all the things that come at me, you know, that one and the man hating is sort of my second one, but it's sort of ever frustrating for me because it's actually a great example, I think, where I've seen men come around on it, because I'm like, why are you saying this really though? Because if what you're saying is like, you don't want me to disparage you. Well, I'm not speaking to you personally. I'm using a generic plural. So let's put that away. And then, okay, you're concerned. What about me, like, disparaging your gender? Well, I mean, my statement stands regardless of whether you feel disparaged or not. So, and even if I did, for example, say, okay, fine, you're right. It's not all men. Like, what have you really achieved? Like, all you achieved was that you got me to backpedal. Like, you didn't really save anybody from anything. So, you know, why are you really doing this? Like, why are you so offended? And I've had a lot of guys kind of come around on that and be like, oh, I guess you're kind of right. but not, you know, not all of them.
Exactly. It's a good feeling. I mean, I've had that happen. And, you know, as I said, in my experience, I have seen a huge chunk of men go from the not all men to, okay, I get it. And I'm your ally and I want to be there for you. And so, speaking of allies, I mean, do you ever talk about that? Like, how can men be allies? Because at least from my point of view, each individual is different. And so I just say, you know, just listen to the woman that you're talking to, whether she's online or whatever, just listen and be open. Because I think what happens is people get very attached, you know, emotionally attached to their own ideas, and they don't want to let go of it. And so it's just like, can't you just put it aside, you know, just set it over there in the corner and then open yourself up and listen to this woman. And let her tell you how to be an ally, as opposed to you mansplaining it to her. And that's basically what it is. And I mean, I hate to be a bitch about it, but that's what it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, I mean, some of my favorite comments are the guys that are like, well, you know, I'm doing all of this for you and you should really be nicer to me. And I'm like, you're raping and killing us. Like, what are you talking about? I mean, I think honestly, there's kind of like two stages of allyship. You know, and the first is what you just said, which is the most important, which is listening. And sort of like, I know you, I trust you that you want to do the right thing. I believe that that's why you're here. I do. If that's what you're telling me, I'm going to take your word for it. But like, if you aren't willing to, you need to actually know what I need in order to help me. So you need to listen to what I'm asking you to do. And then more importantly, you need to put aside what your notions of helping me are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if your notions of helping me are traditional or patriarchal, like you feel like you need to step in front of me, you need to talk over me, you need to defend me, I need you to put those away too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people get really hung up on that step. You know, this is like the oh, I can't even hold doors open thing, right?
Right. Oh, my God.
It's like, you know, I'm not saying you can't ever defend me. I'm not, you know, like, don't you have friends in real life?
Right,
like,
exactly.
How do you interact with people if they're arguing? You know, like, I think people get really kind of in their own heads about it. I've had so many messages from guys that are like, am I white knighting right now? I'm like, you're being awkward. I don't know. But,
white knighting. I never heard that one.
Yeah. So, you know, there's sort of like what I like to say is, the way that you can help me the most is to talk to other guys.
So, yes, exactly.
You know, if you think about a circle of friends that you have, and like, let's say you get into it with one of your friends and they do something really crappy to you. And if you're standing there looking around at the rest of your friends and they're sort of like, you know, looking off into the distance, like they're not your friends, mm-hmm. you know, like they didn't do anything to you, but they're not your friends. Mm-hmm. And that's usually how I try to explain it to these guys, is like, actually in that situation, if someone came at me, like I can respond to them perfectly well myself, but like what I need you to do is like back me up.
Right.
You know? And then later, if they're bringing
even when
it up
it's
again,
uncomfortable.
Yeah. And later, you know, if they bring it up again, I need you to be like, hey, that wasn't cool. Mm-hmm. Because if you aren't willing to do that, like, are we really friends?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where the most effective change happens. Like, I see a lot of guys having like meaningful exchanges in their replies to my tweets. And it's like, it just like warms my heart. Because I see they really are, you know, like as I said in the beginning, like my dad is awesome. I know that, you know, I have a lot of really good guy friends, a lot of really warm and wonderful men in my life, much to the shock and awe, I think, of a right. lot of guys that come to my Twitter. But actually, like, I love men. I just don't like getting treated like shit. So,
right. Well, I mean, you love men, you hate the patriarchy.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, and it reminds me years ago. I was sitting at a table with two men who both had daughters, and I was friends with one of the guy's wives, but she was out of the room. And so I don't, you know, I'm a feminist. So that was the subject came up, and somehow the subject of rape came up and they made an awkward joke and it really bothered me about rape. And so mm-hmm. I, at the time, you know, I wasn't as educated as I am now about how to deal with those kinds of situations. So it made me very angry and uncomfortable. And I just said, and I said in a very nice way, something like, well, you have you guys have daughters. I'm sure you wouldn't want that to happen to them. And then they got all serious and quiet and then the joke stopped. And so I left.
And they're like, you're no fun.
Yeah, really.
Rape jokes anymore.
You stupid bitch. Don't think rape jokes are funny. But I left, and then I was driving home and I was really bothered. You know, it's like uh-huh. the more I thought about it, the more angry I became and the more defensive. And then I realized, I thought, you know what? Here are these two guys that are feminist men in the way that they raise their daughters, because they uh-huh. raise them with equality. They raise them teaching these girls that, you know, that they can do anything and be anything. Yet they still had that holdover patriarchal feeling that they had to make jokes and everything. And I think what was happening is they were sitting at a table with, I'm very tall and I have large bones and I'm, you know, I'm kind of a commanding presence. And uh-huh. I think that because I was talking about this subject with passion, they felt a little awkward. And uh-huh. so they wanted to break what they felt was a serious conversation and make it light. And it's uh-huh. not that I think they thought rape was funny, but right. it was just something that they had been conditioned to think, oh, this is a funny joke or whatever. And so when I came to that realization, I softened my stance. You know, I uh-huh. felt like, all right, it wasn't appropriate what they did, and I'm not going to lecture them on it, but I kind of understand where they were coming from. So it's just kind of helped me for future conversations when those things come up. I'm less afraid to say, you know what? Rape isn't funny.
Right.
It's just not funny ever. So, you know, I mean, I think though what you said, and I hope there are, I mean, I know that there are men who listen to the show who are woke, if you want to call it woke. I mean, uh-huh. they get it. But I hope that if there are more men listening to the show, that is such a great way to describe it, because it's like, listen to us and then talk to other men. It's really, it's important. It's not the idea that men need to save us from other men, but it is the idea that men need to help. They need to help, right. and they need to not stay silent when they see something that is clearly not cool.
Right. Well, I mean, ultimately, there's not that many, but like the phrase locker room talk exists for a reason. Mm-hmm. And it's because men are together with other men only in a locker yeah. room when they have these conversations. So like there's a lot of misogyny that goes on among only men, and yes. certainly to a much greater degree than goes on in front of women. I mean, even traditional elements of chivalry, for example, would mandate that those types of conversations are not appropriate to have in front of a woman. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's these guys who say, oh, I would never say that to a woman, or I would never do that. And it's like, but you're still doing it with your friends, though. Mm-hmm. And if you think that that doesn't impact the way you think about things, you're wrong.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, you can raise your daughters and tell them that you can be anything. You can be an astronaut. You know, you deserve the best. You're a strong woman. But like, if she's watching you joke around with your friends over a bunch of beers and talking about tits and ass and sluts and whatever, like, that's not something that you don't internalize. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, then if I'm around a group of guys as an adult, this is how men interact, and I should be fine with it. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, that it seeps into every layer of our culture in a way that makes it still uncomfortable. Like in your example, you know, I felt like I wanted to say more, but like, I didn't know how to address this, mm-hmm. because on the flip side, you know, they're trying to lighten up something that's uncomfortable for them, but you're trying to express like, this is something that's like really offensive to me, and you're my friends. And so I don't want to make it weird, and I don't want you to think I don't have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
And it's like, none of that would need to happen if we just understood that you don't joke around about rape.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I think the ways that men can contribute the most are by saying, you know, to other guys, hey, like, not cool, man. You know, like I say, like my thing is, instead of saying not all men, say not cool, man.
Right.
Because like, that's how you can help me. And you know, inevitably people will say, well, you know, I'm going to get like a lot of shit from my friends if I say that. And I'm like, well, how do you think I feel?
Yeah. Well, if you want to be an ally, and it's not just about being ally, it's about being a decent person. Mm-hmm. You know, because like there was another tweet that I saw you wrote that says, feminism isn't about men. The whole point is literally to stop making everything about them.
Yeah.
And so I think it comes into the idea of, it's not just about being an ally to feminists. It's about being a decent human being and understanding, you know, like, for instance, my mother has always, if we've ever been in a room or in a conversation with anybody, and I was a little girl when I saw her saying this, if someone said the N-word, my mother would immediately speak up and say, please don't say that around me. I find yeah. that word offensive, and I don't want you to talk like that around me. And uh-huh. it always put people off, but those same people never said it again in front yeah. of her. It doesn't mean that they never said the word outside of, you know, her presence, but as long as she was around, it was nipped in the bud. And I saw her do that. And it, you know, uh-huh. it was like, it was an awesome experience, even though I wasn't able to carry that over into that particular situation I just described, like I wish I would have had the strength at that time, or even the understanding to speak up again. I was kind of floored by what they had said, and I was shocked, and I didn't have anything prepared, and I just did, you know, I kind of froze. And so, and like you said, I didn't want to appear humorless. I didn't want to be the wet blanket on the conversation. And so, but you know, I, you know, knowing that my mother has done this before, you know, moving forward, I kind of grab from her strength, and I'm able to do that now. But yeah, in the end, it's just like, just be a good human being. Because if you, you know, reverse the situation, if you saw somebody being cruel to an elderly person, would you just stand by and say nothing?
Yep.
You know, or saying the N-word or whatever. If you say nothing, then you're basically complicit and even encouraging it.
Right. So, and I think some of that too, you know, ways to improve people's ability to do that is a lot of, you know, as I mentioned, it's a lot of what I'm doing. I'm trying to frame for people like what it looks like to be misogynistic, right? So it's like, we know if somebody uses the N-word or uses a homophobic slur or you know, a xenophobic slur or whatever, like we know what that sounds like. And I think misogyny can sometimes be so opaque because it's sort of like so ingrained in our culture and that it can be uncomfortable to call it out because inevitably it's like, hey, like, what's your issue? I was just kidding or whatever. And the only way that inevitably, like, we will get to a point where even people who don't really think it should be a big deal know that they shouldn't do it, which I think is where we are with the N-word, is to make clear like what those things are, you know? And what does it look like when someone is being, you know, really harmful in their level of misogyny? Things like sexual harassment, things like, you know, victim blaming, slut shaming, objectification. Like, what does that really look like in real life?
Yeah.
And how does it affect women? Because I think, you know, the bit that you described from Jen Kirkman, I think, is a good example. And a lot of, you know, different tweets that I've done that are just kind of like, hey, women, can you share your experiences? Like, and even the women are like, I never realized how many things I do.
Yeah.
Like, how I've changed my behavior in this way until I thought about it, until you asked me the question, you know, like, what would I do if there was no men around for 24 hours?
Right.
I
don't know. Oh my God. That tweet freaked so many men out.
Oh, I know. I'm forever labeled a male genocider after sending them to God. Day camp.
Well, that's awesome. I'm just a baby killing whore.
Yeah.
So. Oh my God. Well, we're going to have to start wrapping up, and I'm just like, I want to talk to you again. So I hope you can come back, because there's all this stuff that I didn't even get to. And unfortunately, we do have to cut it short because my producer is on a tight schedule. But I do want to remind everybody that soon enough, I will be producing the show, and we're going to be adding shows. We're going to have two more shows per month, which will be once per week. And that's going to be exciting. And I think we're going to throw in some other perks, but I'll talk about that a little later. But thank you for coming on the show. And I do hope you'll come back. So
yeah, of course. I was glad to come. Love the invite. So I'm always down to talk feminism. So.
Well, you're so interesting. Tell everybody where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at MRAZ, Feminist Next Door.
And that's, how do you spell that?
It's at EMRAZZ.
Okay, I'm also going to put your Twitter handle in the description on the Patreon. And don't forget to visit the patreon.com/startmeup podcast that we're doing right now to support the show. You can become a monthly subscriber. And in case you didn't know, I already said that. We're doing the, I was reading something, so I apologize. But we're adding shows, so I'm excited about that. And then what else? Well, you can find me on Twitter at authorkimberly. I'm so rattled.
With an E.
With an E at the end. And then you can find Steph at Lady Brain Show. And also you can check out my books, Peyton's Choice, which is about unwanted teen pregnancy, The Virgin Diaries, American Woman, The Pole Dance, and Ain't No Sunshine, Men Reveal the Pain of Heartbreak. Those are all on Amazon.com. And thank you for listening. Please don't forget to leave comments on the Start Me Up Patreon site. We love hearing from you, and we're trying to build a community there. So we will see you next time when we talk with a very smart and very funny Jen Kirkman. And I will be recording and another thing a little later. So thanks again, Em.
And, thank you.
And bye, everybody. Talking.